When did consciousness first evolve? Was there a very first creature who broke the pattern of insentience, feeling sensations and seeing light for the first time in evolutionary history? Or did our capacity to experience the world evolve gradually, like everything else? Phenomenal consciousness shouldn't be unique. We'd expect it to have evolved gradually, just as brains, eyes, and cognitive abilities evolved gradually. Everything in biological evolution came about little by little over time, so it's unsurprising that the cumulative products of natural selection admit of borderline cases. Even human beings are subject to this vagueness. There was no first human, no sharp dividing line in the continuum between definitely human and definitely not a human. But how could this be the case with experiences and feelings and sensations? I can see how it would be the case with particular types of experiences, but how could it be the case with experience itself? On reflection, it seems hard to imagine anything other than a bright borderline between wholly non-experiential reality and experiential reality. Experiences are mental states such that there's something that it's like subjectively to undergo them. It might be indeterminate what you're feeling, but not whether you're feeling. The transition from feeling nothing to feeling something couldn't have been gradual. As soon as it's not nothing, it's something. No matter how minimal a conscious experience is, if it's like something to exist, anything at all, it's no longer like nothing at all. There is no space between these two poles for indeterminacy to live. We'll take a closer look at putative cases of borderline consciousness, for example, states between sleep and wakefulness, experiences that fall indeterminately between pain and not pain, and so on. None of these are genuine borderline cases of consciousness in the relevant sense, and we'll unpack them more later on. There's always a fact of the matter about whether it's like something for a creature or like nothing at all. In other words, phenomenal consciousness is sharp. On the other hand, physical states do admit of borderline cases. If we remove one atom at a time from a given brain state, it will eventually be vague or indeterminate whether or not the organism is still in that brain state. Physical states of a subject's brain admit of borderline cases. So if consciousness is just a kind of physical state, then we'd expect consciousness to follow suit. But since it seems impossible that there could be a borderline case of consciousness, it's either like something for a creature or like nothing at all, then we have reason to think that consciousness is not just a kind of physical state. 1. If physicalism is true, borderline cases of consciousness are possible. 2. Borderline cases of consciousness are not possible. 3. Therefore, physicalism is false. So, what do I mean by consciousness? Roughly, I'll be following how Michael Tye uses the term in his book, Vagueness and the Evolution of Consciousness. Quote, consciousness for present purposes is experience. Experiences are mental states, such that there is inherently something it is like subjectively to undergo them. Examples are feeling pain, feeling an itch, visualizing an elephant, experiencing anger, and feeling fearful. End quote. I'll be using a few terms interchangeably, subjective experience, phenomenal consciousness, what it's likeness, sentience, sensation. For our purposes in this episode, when I say consciousness, I mean the qualitative, phenomenal character of consciousness, the thing that makes the hard problem hard, the thing without which it wouldn't count as a subjective experience at all. At first glance, the border between conscious organisms and non-conscious organisms seems vague and fuzzy. There's no obvious way of resolving the question of which creatures are or are not conscious. Most people agree that cats and dogs have mental states, they experience things, and so are conscious. But fewer will agree that it's like anything to be a fish, even though they have eyes and a nervous system, and I'm not sure what they'd be doing with them other than seeing things. Fewer still will entertain the idea that earthworms have any inner life. But who's to say it isn't like something for the worm who moves from the wet grass over to the sidewalk? Maybe they're driven to behave that way by negative experiences. After all, worms possess a very rudimentary nervous system and seem to be exhibiting purposeful behavior. One reason it's difficult to conclusively settle the question over where consciousness exists in nature lies in the fact that phenomenal consciousness, subjective experience, is publicly unobservable. Physical behavior, on the other hand, is publicly observable. The physical, material aspect of the brain and body is accessible through our senses and scientific instruments, while our inner lives remain elusively private. We can observe avoidance behavior in worms, electrochemical activity in humans, and, crucially for neuroscience, verbal reports like, "That hurts," or "I'm seeing an orange cat right now." But your pain experience and orange experience is directly known by you and you alone. Earlier I said most people believe cats and dogs are conscious. The reason it's possible for some people to defend the idiotic Cartesian notion that it's like nothing to be a cat or dog, that they're not experiencing anything, is because experiences are private. Here, whether or not the privacy of experience counts against physicalism is not the point. The public unobservability of consciousness pretty obviously makes it difficult to determine where consciousness exists in nature, which in turn multiplies the difficulty of testing theories of consciousness. So here comes the really important question. To quote David Papineau, "Is it consciousness itself that is indeterminate, or just our ability to decide about it? It isn't easy to make sense of the idea that consciousness itself is vague. Either the light is on, we feel, or it isn't. The glow of consciousness might be dim in some cases, but a dim light is still a definite light, not a borderline light or non-light. And on reflection, it seems hard to imagine a genuinely borderline case of consciousness. This suggests that any indeterminacy about marginal cases of consciousness must lie in our limited epistemic access to the minds at issue, not in those minds themselves." End quote. The trouble of figuring out where consciousness exists in nature, whether or not a given system is conscious, either comes down to epistemic vagueness, in other words, our limited access to other minds creates indeterminacy, or ontological vagueness, in other words, the indeterminacy is a reflection of its real nature. Consciousness is actually vague. Either our epistemic limitations produced by the privacy of consciousness result in indeterminacy, or, inclusive or, consciousness is actually vague, which means that there is genuine indeterminacy in addition to our epistemic limitations. When does the day become the night? Well, there is no exact moment. When does stubble become a beard? When does someone become famous? There is no fact of the matter. There is no precise threshold. Take tables and chairs. We could gradually deform a table until it's vague whether or not the object counts as a table. So tables admit borderline cases. At some point in our gradual deformation, it will be vague or indeterminate or simply a matter of convention whether this object is still a table. This doesn't seem possible for experience, since there's always a fact of the matter about whether an organism is a conscious being or an insentient mechanism. Sensation is present in the earthworm or it isn't, regardless of what anyone believes about the earthworm or what we're able to discover about it. Besides, what would a borderline case of experience be? A proto-sensation that kind of feels like something? If it kind of feels like something, then it's like something. We can be unsure of what we're feeling, or unsure of whether some experience falls into one category or another, but it's never vague whether experience is present in the first place. Whether earthworms are conscious is uncertain, but there must be a fact of the matter about whether it's like nothing at all to be a worm, or anything other than nothing at all. And those are the two options: nothing at all, or anything, absolutely anything other than nothing at all. Describing a genuine borderline case of experience kind of feels like trying to describe a borderline case of somethingness. How could there kind of be something? As soon as there's not nothing, then there's something. What is the borderline state between something and nothing? If a borderline, indeterminate case of consciousness is impossible, then our trouble in determining where consciousness exists in nature, whether or not a given system is conscious, comes down to epistemic vagueness, not ontological vagueness. Our limited epistemic access to other minds is the cause of any indeterminacy, not the nature of consciousness itself. Thank you. So let's talk about the vagueness of biological phenomena. To remind you, the argument is, 1. If physicalism is true, borderline cases of consciousness are possible. 2. Borderline cases of consciousness are not possible. Therefore, physicalism is false. The motivation for the first premise lies in the vagueness of non-fundamental physical phenomena, especially in the biological world, which is where consciousness is typically assumed to have arisen. Complex, non-fundamental physical states admit of borderline cases. So if consciousness is just a kind of physical state, it follows that consciousness should also admit of borderline cases. Even if we scale down, past the higher level activity of the brain, and zoom into the neuronal activity, vagueness is inescapable even at this more fine-grained level of resolution. To quote Michael Tye, "Neurons are complex physical entities with diverse components. Each neuron has a cell body, dendrites, and an axon. Electrical impulses come in along the dendrites and go out along the axon. Imagine removing atoms one by one from a given neuron. Eventually, as one does so, there will be no neuron left. But along the way, there will surely be a range of borderline cases, entities that are neither definitely neurons nor definitely not neurons. So the property of being a neuronal oscillation is vague. It admits of borderline cases. In general, neurophysiological properties are highly complex. The idea that the relevant neural properties for consciousness are sharp is extremely implausible." End quote. If we remove one atom at a time from a given brain state, at some point it will be indeterminate whether or not the organism is still in that brain state. Physical states of an organism's brain and body admit of borderline cases. If consciousness is physical, we would expect consciousness to follow suit. To quote David Papineau again, "Suggestions for the physical grounds of consciousness include global workspace activity, neural oscillation frequencies, re-entrant neural loops, action-guiding mental representation, and so on. If any theory along these lines is correct, however, there will inevitably be borderline cases of consciousness itself. Global activities and the like come in degrees, so any sharp cutoff point specifying exactly when we have enough for consciousness would be arbitrary. The obvious implication is that some mental states are indeterminate between being conscious and not." End quote. However, as the second premise of the argument claims, this does not seem possible for consciousness. No matter how minimal a conscious experience is, it seems impossible to characterize any case in which it's merely kind of like something to be in that state. We can't describe any borderline case of consciousness. It may be vague whether something is a particular type of experience, maybe it's unclear whether it's this or that shade of green, but it's never vague whether something is an experience to begin with. Aspects of our conscious lives come in degrees, degrees of intensity, richness, complexity, but the presence of experience itself is different. It's binary. There's no conceptual room between like nothing and like something. The contents of experience can be vague, fuzzy, and indeterminate, but there's a sharp line separating the presence and absence of experience. So let's take a look at a few of the commonly proposed examples of borderline cases of consciousness. Most of these are discussed in Michael Tye's book, Vagueness and the Evolution of Consciousness. Say you're waking up from a deep sleep. In that very first moment of wakefulness, you'll be groggy and half-conscious. Isn't this a borderline case of consciousness? To quote Tye, "What I experience is initially indefinite and impoverished. As I become fully awake, what I experience gets richer and richer. But this doesn't show that experience or consciousness itself has borderline cases." End quote. I would say the same holds for coming out of general anesthesia, as well as other supposed borderline cases between sleep and wakefulness. In fact, in the case of general anesthesia, it doesn't seem unreasonable to think that there is a definite moment when the lights turn back on, which then broaden in scope and increase in intensity. If that's the case, though, then consciousness is sharp. To quote Papineau, "There are half-conscious experiences, such as the first moments of waking, but on reflection, even these special experiences seem to qualify unequivocally as conscious, in the sense that they are like something, rather than nothing." End quote. One complication here is memory. I often forget my dreams and I'm entirely unable to recall what I dreamt after waking, hours later, even though I could remember for the first few minutes after waking up. So was I conscious the entire time I was asleep and just don't remember it? In this case, I was certainly conscious for some of it, since dream states are experiential states, and many times I forget what I dreamt, and even that I dreamt in the first place. I don't see why a dim glow of consciousness couldn't be active as long as I'm alive. Memory is a fairly high-level feature of animal consciousness, and it's easy to conceptually separate experience and memory. Other features of our minds go offline and come online, and the contents of our minds change dramatically, but we can't rule out the idea that there's a light that never goes out completely. What about pain? There are examples of negative states that don't seem to qualify as definitely painful. If you put your hand on a warm stove as it gradually heats up, you'll eventually start to feel pain, but when exactly? Is there a precise moment when the stove goes from warm to hot and when your experience turns definitely painful? There probably is no precise threshold, and there will be borderline cases where your experience doesn't seem like it's definitely pain, but also not definitely not pain. So, a borderline case of experience? It is a borderline case of pain, a certain type of experience. But it's not a borderline case between consciousness and non-consciousness, which is what the vagueness argument is concerned with. There are many cases in which it's indeterminate what a subject is feeling, but not whether they're feeling. This is why I mentioned coming out of sleep in general anesthesia first. It's not unreasonable to think that there is a moment coming out of general anesthesia that the light turns back on, which then broadens in scope and increases in intensity. Those who would appeal to such examples as cases of borderline consciousness should know that their way of reading that case is not the only way. Not to mention, their way has the unique disadvantage of invoking something that seems impossible to actually conceive of. When we cross from sleep to wakefulness, one might hold that there is an exact moment when we wake up, with the indistinct contents of consciousness gradually becoming less fuzzy and indeterminate. Alternatively, maybe sleep is not a state in which one experiences nothing at all. Maybe the backdrop of consciousness is always present. It's possible that the boundary between sleep and wakefulness is vague because experience never disappears entirely. Many of the features of human consciousness go offline during sleep, so there could be genuine borderline cases between being asleep and being awake, but it would be a matter of fading certain features of consciousness, not a total cessation of consciousness itself. Here's one more example from Ty. Quote, imagine that you're in a hospital bed feeling pain and that you can adjust a dial that controls the delivery of morphine to your body. As you do so, your pain becomes less intense, gradually transforming itself into a feeling of pleasure. In the middle of this process, there may well be experiences that are not easy to classify. Again, there's indeterminacy at such times as to what you're feeling, but there is no indeterminacy as to whether feeling continues to be present. End quote. There are other examples offered by critics of the argument which also miss the point, mostly having to do with whether an experience falls into this or that category, but we won't take it any further for now. The intuition of sharpness seems to be fairly common amongst physicalists and non-physicalists alike. We also have an apparently conflicting intuition that consciousness comes in degrees, but this isn't a threat to the vagueness argument properly understood. Just as I have no issue describing sleep as unconsciousness, since consciousness denotes more than just experience, so there's no problem with claiming that consciousness comes in degrees. Consciousness can come in degrees in nearly every sense of how people use the term consciousness, save for one, the one that tends to interest me. It's obvious that in some sense I'm more conscious than my cats. I'm conscious of more things than they are. I'm also conscious to a greater degree after I've had coffee than after I've just woken up. I think it's easy to parse out what we're getting at when we say things like, he stumbled around the room half conscious. Or humans are conscious to a higher degree than non-human animals, and so on. The widespread intuitions underlying these statements don't conflict with the vagueness argument. There's no issue with degrees of consciousness in practically every sense of the term, but experience itself is binary. The vagueness argument is concerned with the fact that there's no wiggle room between experience and non-experience. All the putative examples of borderline cases fall short, usually obviously so. So after all this trying and failing to describe an indeterminate state between experience and non-experience, are we justified in taking it to be impossible? To quote Ty, conceivability is defeasible evidence for a metaphysical possibility, and inconceivability is defeasible evidence for metaphysical impossibility. End quote. So we have defeasible support for the claim that a genuine borderline case of consciousness is metaphysically impossible. But if physicalism is true, borderline cases of consciousness should be possible. Since they appear to be impossible, it follows that physicalism is false. So here's another way of putting the argument. Physicalists often talk about emergence in a weak sense. Biology emerges from chemistry, chemistry emerges from physics, and so on. There is a smooth continuum going from fundamental reality all the way up to the biological realm. And just as H2O molecules emerge from the right combination of atoms, so experience emerges from brain activity. The problem is that the products of weak emergence, complex physical states in the biological realm, admit borderline cases. States of an organism's brain and body are vague. So if experience is just a complex physical state, it should be similarly vague. But by virtue of being conscious creatures, we can reflect on the nature of experience and see that experience is sharp. What we'd expect to see, if physicalism is true, is not a sharp phenomenon emerging at the biological level. In short, the products of weak emergence in the biological realm admit of borderline cases. Since experience doesn't, it's hard to see how it could be the product of weak emergence. Explains, quote, "We now have an argument for anti-physicalism that is independent of the discussion on Nagel, Jackson, and Chalmers, that relies on the very intuitive notion that the concept of a conscious state is sharp, and which suggests that one possible upshot is a theory that binds consciousness to fundamental physics, such as panpsychism." End quote. Though I've been arguing that consciousness is sharp, I don't think there's any exact moment when this threshold was actually met. I'm not arguing that a sharp line was crossed at some mysterious point in evolutionary history. Any candidate would seem arbitrary. The world is a strange place, but presumably we'd want some kind of reason that the sharp line was drawn there and not over there. For example, at nervous systems with N neurons instead of N plus 1 neurons. Any explanation of consciousness that terminates in brute arbitrariness is not going to seem awfully compelling. As Philip Goff puts it, if consciousness does not admit of borderline cases, then we'll have to suppose that some utterly precise micro-level change, down to an exact arrangement of particles, marked the first appearance of consciousness, or the change from non-conscious to conscious fetus, and it's going to seem arbitrary that it was that utterly precise change that was responsible for this significant change in nature. End quote. Vagueness arguments seem more supportive of panpsychism than dualism, since panpsychism more easily accommodates our intuitions about vagueness. If experience is sharp, why not just identify like with like? To quote Michael Anthony, "In seeking physical properties whose concepts are sharp, the obvious place to look is fundamental physics." End quote. Not all physical things are vague. Fundamental physical things are not vague. What could it mean for something fundamental to be vague? If something admits of borderline cases, that only seems to suggest that it's non-fundamental, that it's composed of something more fundamental. The fundament must be sharp in a way that a higher-level physical phenomenon is not. Isn't it interesting that consciousness has this feature that seems only to be shared by fundamental things? To quote Nino Kadic, "The vagueness argument suggests panpsychism as one of the options that can accommodate the strong intuition that consciousness is sharp and determinate, because it ties consciousness to fundamental physical entities." End quote. If consciousness is sharp, and fundamental reality can't be vague, then we seem to have some support for the notion that we should place consciousness at fundamental reality, rather than try to defend the unintelligible idea that consciousness can be vague. Superficially, we have a conflicting intuition that consciousness comes in degrees, but as discussed earlier, this isn't a threat to the vagueness argument properly understood. Further, panpsychism easily accommodates both intuitions. It allows us to coherently hold that consciousness is sharp, since it ties consciousness to fundamental physical entities, and that consciousness comes in degrees, since pre-existing conscious material changes in complexity and richness as it evolves. The vagueness argument is primarily an argument against physicalism. It may point suggestively towards panpsychism, but that's an added bonus. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.